Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the RightStream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the RightStream Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to RightStream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I welcome you to another wonderful episode. I'm so excited about today's guest. And just want to, before I get to my author guest today, I just want to let everybody know, if you want to find out more about our network, visit rightstreamradio.com. And at any point during today's broadcast, if you would like to call in with your questions and comments, the number is 347-945-7246. Okay, again, that's 347-945-7246. And without any further ado, I just want to make this comment. I know I probably say this every week, but I am so thankful and thrilled that social media and new technology has really unleashed the creativity of so many talented people all across the country, all around the world, really. And today's guest is no exception. And, you know, you find out, because social media has given us this new vehicle where people who have good stories to tell have a place to produce them and promote them and engage with their readers and, you know, connect with their audience, that not everybody's a writer by profession, but, you know, so many people have such great, compelling stories to tell. And that is certainly the case with author Jack July, who is my guest today. His debut novel is called Amy Lynn, and it has 52 reviews on Amazon and enjoys a remarkable 5-star rating. And Jack is a first-time author. And I have to be honest, I'm 3/4 of the way through his book, and it's phenomenal. And the only thing preventing me from finishing it is just time, because I've got so many projects going on right now. But this book is probably of every book I've read, every novel that I've read, this book has the most well-developed characters just in one setting, in one place, and so many people that are at once relatable, and at the same time, they convey a flavor of the South, which is where the story is set. And I'm going to give Jack an opportunity. I'm going to bring him on the air here in just a moment to talk more about Amy Lynn and the writing process and how his book all came about. But it's such a rich narrative, and I'm going to go ahead right now, and I just want to read a brief paragraph from the introduction from the book in Jack's own words. And then, as I said, I'm going to bring him on the air and kind of let him tell us all about his background, his motivation for writing the book, and, you know, we'll get into the writing process and some of the characters and anything else Jack would like to share with our audience today. So this is Jack in his own words. I'm just reading an excerpt from Amy Lynn from the introduction. And he says, "This book is about a girl named Amy Lynn and those who loved her. She was exposed to both the best and worst of humanity. Her trials and travails are somewhat autobiographical in nature, though I will never disclose what is real and what is fiction. The characters in this book are either real people or compilations of people from my life. I hope while reading this book you will think about those that love you, those that put themselves out for you. Then take the time to find out who and what shaped them, because it will be worth your effort. I am a math major. There are no attempts at literary gymnastics or 25-cent words. My grandpa would give us a quarter when we used big words. This is an American story of an exceptional little girl that, surrounded by love, grows into an exceptional young woman. So please, sit back, get comfortable, and enjoy the story of Amy Lynn." So, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Amy Lynn author Jack July. Welcome,
Hi,
Jack. How are you?
Thank you. Well, wow, what an opening. Goodness gracious, I'm waiting for the band and the balloon.
Well, hopefully we'll have some callers, Jack. I can't promise a band or balloons, but I'm hoping we'll definitely have some callers. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I was reading through in preparation for the show just some of the reviews on Amazon, and they're just phenomenal, and especially for a first-time author. So I can't wait to share some of those with our listeners. But first, Jack, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up in Gary, Indiana, joined the Navy when I was 18, spent 4.5 years, mostly at NAS Miramar, working on F-14s. Got out of the Navy, spent some time with a defense contractor. Lost that job, came back to Gary, Indiana, and worked in the steel mills in Gary to get a trades card, a union trades card, a millwright card. Raced cars a little with my dad for a while. Moved to Wisconsin to chase work because I was working construction, so we chased work all over the country. But a lot of work in Wisconsin, so I moved up there. Found a steady job at Harley-Davidson Motor Company. Met a good Wisconsin girl and got married. We've been married for 20 years now almost. And that's about it, really. Worked there. We got sick of the snow and the high taxes and the corrupt government of Wisconsin. This was in 2008 before Scott Walker. And she had an opportunity to move south. Yeah. She had an opportunity to move south. So she works for General Electric, and she had a big-time job offer. So we moved to Wilmington, North Carolina, which is kind of a resort town. And there was really no work for me, so I was a stay-at-home dad pretty much, and I was bored, and I didn't have a lot going on. So my dad used to say, when he was alive, he used to say, someday I'm going to write a book. And so I decided I would do something that he didn't get to do. So I did. I sat down, and I wrote a book. And that's pretty much it.
Well, you certainly wrote a good one, Jack, and I know that obviously from what I've read and shared with the audience, you know, and from your introduction, that the book is based on real events, and I just want to ask you a little bit about that. You know, how, without divulging anything that should not be divulged, but I just want to ask you about the process of doing that, and how difficult was it, and how, I guess, did you go about creating these characters? And let's start with Amy Lynn, too, because you have a female protagonist, which you've written beautifully. So tell us a little bit about all of that.
Okay, well, my first thought of a female protagonist was that I have daughters. I have two daughters. I have 1-9 and 1-14. And in the book, I tried to put a lot of colloquial wisdom, you know, a lot of experience, a lot of things that go on. And someday those girls, I won't let them read it yet because they're too young for it right now, but someday when they do read it, I want them to see the lessons that I try to put in the book, the wisdom of the Granny Patches and the strength of the Uncle Jack and the strength of the father and the hard work of Amy and all those things that are important and all those things that no matter what happens, if you work hard, if you keep your head straight, if you put your faith in Jesus, if you do the right things do work out, and they do work out for the better. So, but that's why I chose a female protagonist. Now, insofar as what it's like writing about real people and real things and real stories, it's easy. It's easy because you don't have to make stuff up. You change a lot of things. You change a lot of names. You change a lot of places. You change a lot of conversations. You change things. But the spirit of what you're writing is right there in front of you. So the hardest part is actually sitting down and forcing the discipline, having the discipline to sit down and write. That is probably the most difficult part of the whole thing.
Well, I certainly agree with you that you already sort of have your plot, you have your events, you know, because it's based on real life. So I mean, I found that in my own writing to be absolutely true. So when you talk about finding the discipline, Jack, like how did you do that for yourself? I mean, did you say, okay, every day from this time to this time, I'm going to sit in front of my computer and, you know, I'm going to write X amount of words? Like how did you discipline yourself throughout the process of writing?
I didn't have anything else to do, Daria. I had nothing else to do. I was bored. I was sitting at home in a 3-bedroom house. I had nothing to do. I rode my bicycle, I lifted weights, I did those things, but then I sat and stared at four walls. And I don't know if you know about daytime television, but there's really not a bunch of things to watch. So I was just bored. And so I had a couple hours a day to spend on it.
Well, that's good. So you're, I guess truth. I take it you're not a Days of Our Lives fan then.
No. I like Moonshiners. I like Moonshiners and Duck Dynasty. That's what I like.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, just starting with the protagonist, Amy Lynn, I mean, you know, when the book opens, it's just, as a reader, you're struck right away by the fact that this little girl's strength and her resilience is just remarkable. I mean, you know, the story opens and she's already been through more tragedy in her 12 years. I mean, she starts out as a 12-year-old than many people have, you know, well into adulthood, and yet she's got a lot of heart and she's just very stoic and she just does what needs to be done. So I guess what I'm asking is how did you, was that taken from your own, obviously it was taken from your own life, but I mean, when you were writing her, did you have specific people in mind?
Yes, I did. I did. I have a family in Alabama that, they grew up poor, really poor. My grandfather was a coal miner. He served in the war. Some of my family made moonshine for extra money. They were moonshiners. They were hard men. They were tough men and women. They didn't enjoy the creature comforts that we take for granted. Every day was a fight for survival. And I knew these people, and I knew their stories, and they laughed about them. They told them as funny stories, but some of them were so tragic. You know, were so deep and dark and tragic, even though they laughed about them as they were telling them because it's something that happened a long time ago, and you find the humor in tragedy. But that's basically what it was. That's what I thought about her. You know, she's been through so much, but you can't just constantly live in this world of funk and darkness. You're going to find the light. You know, if you have a faith in Jesus, she goes to church, she believes in things, she's going to find the light. And she found the light. And she worked hard, and she did what she was supposed to do. And that's how I wrote about her. That's what I thought about when I was writing it.
Well, you know, and one of the other things that struck me reading it to Jack was that Amy Lynn is sort of in the antithesis of what's going on in our culture today. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of that recent case of the 18-year-old from New Jersey suing her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think, wow, you know, this is, you know, at one time in our culture, Amy Lynn was the norm. Unfortunately, it seems like we're becoming, a nation of victims and victimhood. And this book, to me, was also the antidote to that. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
It can be. You know, somebody brought up the argument to me one time about children and about how they turn out as adults, and they throw out that, is it nature or is it nurture? And I say yes. I say yes, it's both. I think it's a little bit of both. When you grow up a certain way in certain households, under certain stresses, you don't know the difference. You know, this is the way it is. No matter how bad it is or how good it is, this is the way it is. The worst it is for you is the worst you know. The best it is for you is the best you know. So
yeah.
So to compare lives is really very difficult, because if you're a child growing up in a stable family with two good parents, I tell my kids all the time, I wish I had your parents, you know. But I love my mom very much, but that's what I tell them, you know, because they don't get how lucky they have it, because this is their norm. So I can easily see how a young lady like the one in New Jersey could become so disillusioned with a little problem or a little issue that it would be a giant thing. I don't blame her or condemn her for how she feels. It is sad, though. It is sad. And if somebody ever turned the lights out or turn the water off in a city. Just turn the water off for a couple of days. Watch what happens. You know? People would lose their minds. There would be wholesale slaughter and killing and fires and rage and craziness. Just turn the water off. You know? So people have lost any sense of an ability to survive, any sense of an ability to suffer through hardship, real hardship, not they took my phone away, you know, real hardship, real, you know, there's no food in the refrigerator, there's, you know, it's cold in the house, we don't have any heat, you know, real things. And they're so beyond anything, they're so beyond understanding what hardship is, it's easy to see why they behave the way they do.
Yeah, that is true. And I was one of those people that was very blessed with the parents that I had and the upbringing. But it's funny, my dad, who was the son of immigrants and, you know, came from a stable home, but very poor. I mean, they lived in a row house in Philadelphia and he had good parents, but, you know, he wanted to be a doctor. And so he knew he was going to have to work his butt off to get there. And he did. And we always used to tease him, you know, about, you know, at Christmas time, he'd joke around, you know, and he'd say, you know, I used to get oranges and apples and chocolate bars in my stocking, you know, and it's just funny. So, you know, the point is well taken, but just like you, my dad wasn't, I mean, he was happy to be able to give us more than his parents were able to give him. So, I mean, I absolutely understand your point, but at the same time, I just really loved seeing, you know, I'm a fan of the old TV show Little House on the Prairie, you know, and oh, just yeah. like you're saying, a lot of the characters in this, even though it's set in modern times, they have that same kind of heart that, like, the Ingalls family had. And that same, just like you're saying, the faith in God and Jesus and the belief that if you work hard, you'll get there. And, you know, where things like tragedy actually forge tougher souls. And which leads me to my other point with Amy Lynn. And I don't want to, I really do not want to give away the plot, but I just want to mention, there's one, what I'll call a turning point for her that's just a horrific scene, and it's very violent. And I just wanted to ask you about, you know, how difficult was it to write something like that? And just, you know, knowing that it's a female character, it's a young girl, did you run into any difficulties having to have her go through that kind of an experience?
Well, the whole book, I would be typing things and I would find myself tearing up. I would find myself crying. And I didn't know why. And the scene you suggest was, oddly enough, not that much of an emotional thing for me. It was not. It was more it was as a matter of fact. It was playing through a situation. But there were other places in the book, just conversations that characters would have, where I would find myself tearing up because they were very emotional, because those were conversations I had with relatives in the past, with maybe my father or with maybe my grandfather, or, you know, and I would remember those conversations and I would remember those people, and it would really tear me up. Those were the parts of the book that really affected me emotionally. It's strange because the parts that people... I got a lot of reviews, an insane amount of reviews from what I found out. I didn't know. I thought everybody had that many reviews, but I guess not. And as I'm reading these reviews, the parts that people are parroting back to me were not the parts that affected me. They were the parts that more came from my... that were a matter of fact, that came from my subconscious. The rest of it was what affected me. So I guess as a writer, I don't know if all writers experience that or not, where what their subconscious writes, it is what everybody else sees, and what they mean to write is what nobody sees. And it's really that's been an eye-opening thing for me.
Yeah, and you know, Jack, speaking of reviews, and I should have mentioned that I met Jack in the Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. It's a group of liberty-minded readers and writers and aspiring authors. So if you would like to join, check that out, Conservative Libertarian Facebook Alliance. Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance on Facebook. But one of our colleagues, and Jack, I want to read this review, because one of our colleagues, Kia Hebe, actually wrote... you know, as I was looking through these, I thought hers was one of the best, and she really captured it. And I'm gonna read a portion of it on the air and kind of get your reaction to it. But Kia Hebe, who is also an author of two books, wrote about Amy Lynn. Amy Lynn is rich and vast and witty and wise. It's the tale of a good, strong Alabama girl and the unique, remarkable people in her life who shape her as she grows into a woman. As a girl, Amy Lynn Braxton suffers through some horrible events, any one of which could dispirit a weaker person and twist them into a hopeless, dehumanized wretch. But Amy is big-hearted, smart, and hardworking, and she is blessed with a strong, loving family. When tragedy strikes, she works through it by force of her own will, with the support and advice of her beloved Uncle Jack and Aunt Carla Jo. These two adults each have unique histories of their own and are unlike any characters I've seen. Their wisdom. Amy Lynn is not and a legend. I loved reading this book because it was endlessly entertaining and completely unpredictable. It was packed with novel locations and detailed information about a myriad of things. I am from the New York City metro area, and while Amy Lynn and her family are from rural Alabama, the culture is very different from what I'm used to, and I grew to love it. The Braxtons live an easy-paced life full of love, common sense, faith, and enjoyment of each other, hobbies, and the outdoors. When evil strikes, as it does everywhere, they have very direct ways of dealing with it, bracing and cathartic. And that's from Kia Heavey. And please go to Amazon.com, everyone, and check out the reviews for Amy Lynn, because they're definitely worth the time to read. But, you know, that was one of the things, Jack, that stood out to me as well. I mean, I was raised in the suburban Philadelphia area, and yet I could so easily relate to these characters, even though, you know, they're from the rural South and maybe, you know, the situations are different, and yet there's so many commonalities, too. And at the same time, you give such a flavor to your readers of what that life is like.
Well, let's start off with the wit. Kia Heavey's a doll, and I read that, and I blushed and said, "Aw, shucks," and kicked the dirt, because I don't see that in the book, I guess because I wrote it. I don't see it, okay? I'm so happy that other people enjoy it, but I don't see it. Insofar as the wit and the wisdom, that's not my wit and wisdom. That is wit and wisdom of generations. That is the wit and wisdom of generations of rural people. That's all that is. That is stories that I've heard growing up. And I guess I always put value in my aunts and my uncles and my grandparents and the stories they told and the things they had to talk about. I had a lot of really, really wonderful memories. I didn't see him much because my dad was in the Navy, so when I did see him, it was special. They used to put me on an airplane. We lived in San Diego when I was a kid, when my dad was in the Navy. My mom and dad would put me on an airplane. I was 5 or 6 years old, and I would fly by myself first to Illinois to see my mother's family, and I would spend a couple weeks with them, and then they'd put me back on the plane. Then I'd fly to Alabama, spend a couple weeks with my dad's family, and then they put me back on the plane, and I'd fly home, and I'd do it by myself. And the fact that my parents gave me that opportunity, it was a big deal. But that book is me telling stories of my family. It's me telling the wisdom that was passed down to me, you know, from my parents and my grandparents and my aunts and uncles. So I really can't take a lot of credit for it. The best thing I can do is hope that the positive things I wrote in the book, when it comes to people and situations and raising children and how you handle yourself, you know, I hope I can take those lessons and apply them to myself as well as my children. I guess that's my goal. So, yeah, that's it.
Well, Jack, we have a familiar caller on the line, and I'm going to go ahead. Actually, we have two callers, but I'm going to start with the one that jumped onto the switchboard first here, our mutual friend and colleague, Robert. Let me go ahead and welcome him to the program. Hey, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well, how are you?
I'm awesome, especially with Jack July on the radio. That always makes me happy.
Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to call and say, hey, first of all, you can take credit for it, okay? Because what do writers do? They tell stories. A lot of times they tell stories that have been told before. They just put them in their own words. That's what you did. So, I mean, yeah, nobody can really take credit for all the wisdom and all the knowledge that they have, but I definitely think you should be able to take full credit for Amy Lynn, which I'm in the middle of reading right now. So,
okay.
Just want to put that out there.
Well, thank
and
you
Robert,
very much, Robert. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just want to say that I did. I actually met Robert at CPAC for the first time face-to-face, and I've never met a man with such a grand positive attitude, and he's a joy to be around. He introduced me to David Bernstein, and I had an opportunity to go on his show. And it's Mr. Bertrand is a very fine man, and he also has a show, so you should tell people about that, Robert, because his show is also wonderful. So I just want to put that out there.
Oh, well, that's all right. I advertise the hell out of it elsewhere.
Well, it's funny. I'll just tell a quick story. Robert and I met a couple of years ago, or I don't know, a year and a half ago or something, when he called into a show that I used to co-host. For another reason, and we brought him back as a guest, and then eventually when I started, we built that network with another friend. We said, Robert, you have to have your own show, and so he's doing a great job. But, Robert, I wanted to get some of your impressions of, I know you said you were halfway through Amy Lynn, so what are some of the things that stand out to you about the book?
Well, sorry for the coughing so much, but yeah, I just want to point out that just the opening itself is one of like the really, it really sets the tone for like the world that it's in. He's very good at world building, and you know, if he was to move on to any other field, any other genre, he'd be able to kind of build a really believable, interesting world with a lot of interesting characters right off the bat. And that's something that like I don't see a lot from first time writers. So with Jack, I definitely enjoy that. But you know, as you said, there's definitely a lot of, you know, tragedy, and there's a lot of, like, I guess the best way to deal with tragedy is through, you know, loving, caring family, and I just think that Jack's done a really good job at presenting it in that way. I don't want to, you know, give too much away. I don't know how much you guys have already given away.
Yeah,
it's a linear story. I wish I could, but it's such a linear story that, you know, it's funny, when I talked to people about it. I talked to the professional writers and the professional editors and the people who read it but like it but don't know how to classify it. They say it doesn't have a genre, and it's not three act, which is a term that I just recently learned, and it's not a lot of things because it's not academic. There's nothing academic about it. It's more like you're sitting on a porch with your uncle or your grandpa and you're telling a story. And that's kind of how I wrote it. That's how I wanted to write it.
Well, if it was academic, it would have been about how all of your characters were actually racist. And...
Yeah, there you go. Justin, we have another caller on the line from the 203 area code. I'm hoping this is who I think it might be, but let me go ahead and bring this caller on because I want to be mindful of everyone's time, too, because I know it's the middle of the afternoon. So, caller from 203 area code, you are on Write Stream Tuesday. Oh, and the caller has dropped off. Maybe it was someone just listening. I'm sorry. You know, Blog Talk Radio, there's no way to distinguish if the person wants to come on the air or if they just want to listen by phone. So,
but that's
because
it gives me the option to say press 1 if I want to be in the the call queue.
Oh, wait, the caller is back. Let me see if this person wants to come on, and hang on 1 second here.
Well, you can put him in screening, and me and Jack can just talk.
Okay, let me
that's
screen
true.
This. Go ahead.
But it's her show.
It is.
We can't hijack her show. That's not very nice.
Yeah, we're not occupiers. We're not occupiers.
That's true. We don't have the T-shirts.
Well, we don't have the T-shirts, and I don't have any camping equipment at this point.
None.
Zero. Like I don't like camping where it snows. That's my thing.
Yeah. My wife calls camping a hotel with no room service.
Exactly. You know, I had a friend who was prior Army, and then he joined the Navy. And he said, I just don't like camping. That's why I got rid of the Army.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Listen, this is Kian. She's pressed for time. So I want to just bring her on the air, and we'll get back to that answer. But I want to give her an opportunity. She has a question for Jack. And I know she's working, so let me just bring her live here for a moment.
Just move aside, everyone, please. I'm terribly important and pressed for time. You have to take my question right away.
Damn straight.
Hi, everyone. It's nice to hear you guys. I did have a question for Jack. I was listening to you talk about what went into writing Amy Lynn, and I happen to know that you're working on a sequel for it, and I am wondering how much of that is also things that you are drawing from your own life experience, and how much of this are you fabricating at this point, or are you creating?
Other than my time in the military, And other than the attitude and opinions of the character proper and things the protagonist likes, nothing. The book is a continuation of the first book, and the second book is straight-up fiction.
Because that's awesome.
I pretty much said, okay, here's this. I built this heroine from scratch. You know, I took this little girl, and using everything I knew about life and everything I knew about people, I built her. I built her from scratch, and I produced her at the end of the book. I said, okay, here she is. Here's what she is. Here's how she got there. Now let's continue some adventures for her. Actually, the first time I wrote the book, I was going to kill her, believe it or not. I was going to kill her off, call it one book, and have a nice day. That's what I almost did, and I was talked out of it by the liquor store lady. So
I would never forgive you.
Yeah, well, and people wouldn't, and I'm glad I didn't. But all things happen for a reason, so... But thank you, Kia. Yes, I just crested 70,000 words today, and it's called Golden Angel. So,
I really can't wait for
it. Awesome.
I'm
working
hard on
it. I feel like
Amy
Lynn is like the pilot episode, and now you are all set up for this incredible character. So I hope there are a lot of books coming.
I hope people enjoy it. It's difficult for me to write. I'm not a professional. But long as people enjoy it and enjoy her, it makes me happy.
Do you guys mind if I ask one more question? I know you were talking, and I have to go. I'm sorry. But I just had one more question, too. Did you ever try to get a regular literary agent, or have you never gone that route where you tried to get published traditionally?
I don't know what a literary agent is.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, that's what I figured. Your book is very unique, and I'm so glad, and that's why indie publishing is so great. All right, guys, I got to get off the phone, but carry on. And I just wanted to say hi, and hi, Robert, and hi, Daria.
Hey.
You guys rock.
Kia, thank you. Thank you, Kia, for your support and your kind words. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for writing such a great book. I'm not kidding. It's one of my all-time favorites. So I hope Golden Angel is as awesome. All right. Well, best of luck with that. It should be huge. All right. Bye,
thanks,
guys.
Bye, Kia.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, guys. So where were you when I rudely interrupted you?
We were just making chit-chat about camping.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And Occupy.
Oh, I thought you guys were talking about the liquor store lady. I thought, oh, no, I didn't get
enough
of
that
question.
Oh, no, I sold that to Kia. I sold Kia the liquor store. You want to hear the liquor store lady story?
Yeah.
Yes.
Robert, don't mind. I really need to – I want to hear the liquor store lady story.
I want to hear it, too.
Okay.
Well, if you got time now. I don't know when your breaks are. It's going to take a few minutes.
We got time.
All right. Excellent. Okay, well – anyway, I'm sitting at home, and I'm writing this book, and I get to about chapter 20. And I go through, and I read it, and I don't know how to write. I don't know. I'm stealing my punctuation from a Tom Clancy novel. I'm looking where to put the quotation marks and the periods and where to capitalize things and which side of the quotation mark the period or comma goes on. And is it a period or a comma? You know, it's driving me nuts because I have no clue what I'm doing. And I got to chapter 20, and I quit. So I let it go. I let it sit there. I think it was about a month I let it sit there. But anyway, me and my wife, we enjoy a brandy and Coke, you know, in the evenings at times. And I went to a liquor store. And when you're in North Carolina or you're in the South, when you go to a cash register to check out, you catch up, you know. And people are going to stand behind you, and they're going to understand. Because you're going to catch up, and you're going to talk about things and how you've been and what you're doing and where you've been. Just the way it is. So people from the North get irritated about it when they go to the South and they have to stand there and wait for people to catch up, but that's just the way it is. So anyway, me and the liquor store lady, her name is PJ. Me and PJ were just sitting there chit-chatting, and there was nobody up there. It was just us. And she said, well, what you been up to? I said, oh, you know, same thing. Stay home, Dad. We get the kids, do the laundry, figure out what to make for dinner, blah, 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 blah. I said, I started writing a book. I said, but then I quit. I said, I'm a writer. And she's like, well, my dad used to write books. I'm like, really? Said, yeah, my dad wrote books. I used to read his books when he was writing them. She said, why don't you bring it to me and let me read it? I said, all right, I'll do that. So I went home and I printed it all off, all 20 chapters, and didn't see her for a while. And a week later, I went back and I dropped it on the counter. I said, there you go. So she said, okay, cool, thanks. You know, and weeks go by. And I didn't see her again. And I showed up one day at the liquor store. I was out of brandy, and I walked in, and she has a line of customers there, and she looked at me, and her eyes got big, and she walked around the counter, left all the customers standing right there at the counter, and she put her finger in my chest, and she says, don't you dare quit writing. Don't you dare quit writing. Keep writing. And I'm like, all right, I'll do that. So as time went by, every week I would write. I would spend the week writing. I might write one or two, three chapters. And every Friday I would drive by the liquor store on the way to get my kid, and I would see if her car was parked there. And if her car was parked there, then I'd go in and drop off my work to her. So the way it turned out, the lady at the liquor store became my muse, and that's how I really finished the novel, from a lady I didn't know that worked at the liquor store.
That's a great story. I love that.
And that's how things happen, you know. But she had faith in me. My wife won't read it. My wife still hasn't read it. She won't read it because she kind of knows what's real and what's not and what's true, and she kind of knows some things and some things she doesn't know, but she still hasn't read it. But my wife has a very specific job, and that's when all you people tell me how wonderful I am. She looks at me and goes, no, you're not. You're still an idiot, so just calm down. So that's my wife's
just
job.
Just calm down.
Yeah. So when I can't get my head through the bedroom door, because I'm sitting in my bedroom in front of the computer talking to you guys, so when I open the door and my head won't go through the door, she'll walk up with the pin and go, put all the air out, so then I can walk out into the living room, you know. So that's how that works.
That's too funny. But, you know, I love that story because one of the things I love about new technology is that it's democratized the ability to publish and write. And I'm glad that you didn't try to find a literary agent. I mean, just from my own experience, I was editing a book for someone else several years ago, and around that time I started writing my own book, and I watched her jump through all of these hoops trying to get the attention of somebody in the traditional publishing world. And for like a year this went on, and by the time I finished my book, I said, you know what, I am not putting myself through that. So
yeah,
I never bothered.
My wife has a friend who runs an animal rescue. She runs a dog rescue. And she wrote a small book about one of her dogs, a very special dog. And it was a very sad, tragic book. And I wish I could remember the name of it. Because you will cry. If you are a human being, you will sob at the end of it. But anyway, I know she published a book. So I said, well, how did you do that? I had my wife find out how she did it. And she said she used CreateSpace. Well, CreateSpace is a division of Amazon. So I called these kids at CreateSpace, and they were wonderful to me. They said, yeah, we'll help you. So I had the manuscript, and they said, okay, we have editors. So it was a little pricey. I don't know, some people, you know, price is subjective. To some people, this amount's a lot, and this amount's not a lot. Depends on who you are. But I figure with CreateSpace, I probably had about $3,000 in the book. And the first time I went to CreateSpace, I spent $1,500 on one of their editors. And the poor girl is probably still drinking because I write horribly. And she went through each and every page and changed so much stuff. And not the content, but punctuation and my ability to randomly capitalize words just out of the blue, you know, as I'm typing. And, you know, it's just I'm a horrible writer. But once she finished, she got it back, and it was relatively clean. So I went ahead and published it. Well, I sold a few copies, and a few of my friends read it, and they're like, you know, this isn't misspelled, and that's misspelled, and that doesn't make any sense. And I went, oh, all right. Well, so I was involved at a blog called Ace of Spades, and I don't know if you've all heard of the Ace of Spades blog, but there's a lot of very interesting people on it, and it's a terse blog, and it's a rough blog. You better have some thick skin before you log in there, but they're wonderful people, And what happened was they started reading it and loving it. So, as a matter of fact, the very first review on there was written by someone I don't know, but someone from the Ace of Spades. So then they took it upon themselves to start editing the book and sending me edits. So I ended up crowdsourcing the second edit through Ace of Spades. And that's how I got the second edit part done. And that didn't cost me nothing. That was just goodwill from a bunch of wonderful people. So then I went through and fixed all the stuff they had me fix, and I sent it back to CreateSpace, and then they put out a second edition. Well, then nobody liked my cover because I had a cover made by an artist. I had them paint a cover, spent $400 and commissioned a painting for an author or for a cover. And everyone told me it sucked, you know, and I'm like, no, it doesn't suck. It's wonderful, you know, and I didn't listen to anybody. And turns out, yeah, it sucked. It was horrible. You know, the face on Amy Lynn looked like somebody drew a picture on a thumb. It was terrible, you know. And so finally I said, all right, fine, I'll change the cover, but what do I do, you know? So I grabbed my daughter and I grabbed a rifle out of my closet, and we walked down an old dirt road, and I snapped some pictures. I said, this is an awesome cover. I'm going to use this. So So that's the cover you see now. I didn't hire anybody to do it. I just put it on there, and then I sent it back to CreateSpace, and they launched a new edition with a new cover and then the latest edition interior. So that's how the book got to where it is now.
I just love the rugged individualism of the conservative writing movement. It's so great.
Well, it's what you do when you don't know. You know, you have to stab your way through. I don't know what to do. I mean, I didn't know. I just knew I had this book, and I knew I wanted people to read it. And the nice thing about CreateSpace is they throw it right out on Amazon, and for $60 they digitize it and they make a Kindle edition. So now it's on Amazon, and now it's on Kindle, and now everybody in the world can read it. I've gotten emails from Switzerland, India, England, people writing me about my book from all over the world. And I'm like, oh, my God, here I am, a little factory worker, you know, living in South Carolina. You know, tomorrow morning I'm going to get up at 5:30, and I'm going to be at work by 7, and I'm going to be bolting parts on BMWs in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And these people all around the world think I'm some kind of author, you know, which is – it's kind of bizarre. It's a bizarre situation. It freaks me out.
Well, Jack, that brings up another question that I wanted to ask you, too, in terms of marketing. I mean, did you so these people, I mean, they found out about the book because it was on Amazon and all these, you know, all these sites, or did you actively try to promote it? I mean, how did you go about the marketing process, if at all?
I didn't. I've done nothing.
We do it for him.
That's right.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's you know, CLFA, you know, Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance. I've brought it forth to them, you know, and I went to CPAC. CPAC was the first time I ever physically stood in front of people and held my book and said, "Here, would you like to buy my book? Let me tell you about it." And that was a very, very eye-opening experience. And I learned a lot from Michael Eisenberg, who is also an author, a fairly good author, from what I understand, but more than a good author, he's a wonderful man. And he took the time to teach me how to sell, and he took the time to teach me how to talk to people when you're trying to sell something. And he actually, over that 3 days of CPAC, he taught me a skill, which I'm very grateful for. See, I feel lucky because I've been surrounded. It seems like my wife tells me, she says, every time you try something, you trip and fall into a bed of roses. I don't know how you do it. She says, but you meet these wonderful people, and they always want to help you. And I said, I don't know. It's just the way things work out, you know. But that's what my literary career has been, finding one helpful, kind person after another who has stepped up and said, hey, you know, I see something in you. Maybe we can work with this. Maybe we can make this happen. You know, and that's what it's been like.
Fantastic.
My hope is that all these amazing and, I guess, go-getters, self-starters are going to get, like, found by a good publishing group. And we have, like, a bunch of conservative publishing groups, you know, starting up, and they're the ones willing to do the promotion, the marketing, a lot of that stuff. But I just feel like we have the right attitude. Most of us, even the people who've been traditionally published, kind of have this attitude where they're willing to do it all themselves. And I think that's very valuable, especially when on the left, you know, you have people sending, like, manuscripts to all these, you know, different liberal publishers, and liberal publishers don't really do much with them, and then they don't do much to promote themselves. I mean, we have a real opportunity. We have a real opportunity.
Never occurred to me. Never occurred to me to do that. Not once. I just didn't know the difference. You know, sometimes it's good not to know the difference.
It really is, because you would have wasted your time, or worse, somebody would have ruined your book. They would have said, hey, listen, this stuff about the guns, no, it's not going to sell.
And Jesus. Get that Jesus guy out of there. That Jesus guy is no good. Get him out of there.
And just, you know, and just even the values of self-reliance and overcoming and the power of the individual and the love of family, those things probably would have been rejected too.
Yeah, I agree. I've been trying. See, I love to read, okay? I adore reading. My mom taught me to read when I was very, very small. By the time I was 5 years old, I was reading Reader's Digest to the old person next door. There was an old man that lived next door. Mr. Wilson was the thing. And I would go sit there, and I would read Reader's Digest to him, and it would just thrill him that a five-year-old kid could read. And over the years, I've read so many good books. And, you know, when I was 13, 14 years old, younger than that, I think. But anyway, I was taking my mom's Harold Robbins books and reading those, which is, you know, kind of a sexual eye-opening to a 13-year-old. But the Harold Robbins books were wonderful novels, you know, well-written, you know, smart novel. And I just kept reading. And as I got older, I ran out of things to read. Had it not been for Tom Clancy and Vince Flynn, I don't think I would have found anything to read. I'm just running out of things I like to read. And then I joined this Conservative Libertarian Fiction Alliance, and then I start reading people like, you know, Kay Heavey and Chris Baker and Don Strickland and Cedar Sanderson and all these people who are just regular people who write books. And I'm reading their stuff, and I'm just enjoying the heck out of it. And I'm going, wow, why can't all these people be, you know, at the end kiosk at the Walmarts? You know, why aren't they there? You know, that's the way I think about things.
We will be.
Yeah.
Lord, I hope so. I'd rather be farting through silk instead of cotton, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
My problem is finding the time to read everybody's books, but I agree with you. It's so great. And one of the things I love about the CLFA is that everyone is so supportive of everyone else. And I think that's another thing that kind of, I think it distinguishes our side in many ways, because we believe that there's enough success for everybody, and by helping someone else, you're actually helping yourself. And I just love that whole spirit of cooperation and constructive feedback.
Well, you're only going to read one book one time. You know, there's no sense in stabbing your neighbor in the back, because once that person's done with your book, well, they're going to look for a different book, you know? Why not promote somebody else's book? Why not promote a good book, a good dystopian fiction novel, or a good fantasy, or a good sci-fi, or you know, why not? You know, it's what makes sense.
Well, we build our audience together. Don't forget that, and we have to satisfy them together.
Yeah, absolutely. And Robert, you mentioned these new style, you know, conservative libertarian publishing groups. I mean, I'm going to be interviewing Liberty Island in the next couple of weeks with Jamie Wilson and Griffiths. And I'm also, you know, I also interviewed last year Val Muller and Eric Egger of Freedom Forge Press, and they had an anthology that came out last September called Forging Freedom. And so,
they were,
you know,
awesome.
Yeah, and so technology really, and it's really turned the whole dynamic of the publishing industry around, too. I mean, and I said before, it kind of democratized the whole process, and that's why now, even traditionally published authors, I mean, Robert, you mentioned this, that they have to do so much of their own marketing. It's because of all this competition that new technology has enabled.
Yeah, and you know, don't forget, you know, we already have a foothold. We have Bain, and if you write, you know, kind of action-oriented fantasy. If you write military science fiction or urban fantasy, you have a very good possibility of getting your stuff published through Bain, as long as it's good writing. And I mean, and don't get me wrong, they're not, you know, they're willing to even publish, you know, straight up Marxist, as long as the fiction is good. But they've basically been a, you know, a libertarian. Stronghold for a while now, and I think that all we need to do is keep on expanding on that strategy. And you mentioned the Freedom Forge; those people are amazing. When I first discovered them, I immediately did like an email interview, and I can't remember what website I published it on, but it was fun. I got to talk to them, and I thought that they were. They just have their heads in the right place. They understand what they're doing, and they understand what they're up against. And of course, you know, Liberty Island, just, you know, we're building the infrastructure that we need.
Well, if you guys want a little inside baseball, Jamie Wilson from Liberty Island has agreed to edit Amy Lynn Golden Angel, so I'll be working with her my second book, which is I'm very excited about, somebody with actual skills and ability, so I'm very thrilled about that.
Excellent.
She's very talented.
That's what I hear.
Yes, she is. I can't wait. You know, I've interviewed her before, and she'll be coming up the week after next with Griff We're going to be talking about Liberty Island. And, no, I agree. It's just so exciting to see what's happening now and how, you know, conservative and libertarian fiction writers are just sort of coming together and really making this happen. I mean, it's just – it's great to see it.
Be a part of it. Dear Jack, I'm going to have to go, but I think my daughter wants to say something to you.
Okay. Sure.
You want to say something to Jack and Daria?
Awesome.
I love you.
Okay, she loves you.
Aww. I love you, too.
I love you, too.
Aw.
I was doing this to my daughters.
Do what you're supposed to. That's what you're supposed to do. All right, but thank you guys for talking to me so long. Jack, please sell a billion copies of your book.
I'm working on it, Robert. I'll give you a ride in my Ferrari if it happens.
All right. And your private airplane.
Thanks,
Have
Robert.
Have a good one.
Bye.
You too. Bye. So, Jack, you know, we talked about blogs. Wait, I have a quick, we have like about 10 minutes to go here. And we talked about blogs, you know, Ace of Spades. And I was just curious, do you have any plans to start your own blog? Or do you have one?
I wouldn't have no idea how to do that. I don't know. I'm kind of the Fred Flintstone of the internet. I really don't. I don't understand any of it very much. I'm pretty good with Word. I can navigate through Word pretty good to write my book. I'm just learning Facebook now, how Facebook works because of the CLFA, and the kids I work with at work. I work with a lot of young black kids. They're like 20 to 25, and we all work together on a line. It's like me and all these young kids, you know. I just adore them. I adore the heck out of them. But they taught me how to text. So now I can text, but they make fun of my flip phone. So now I'm actually going to have to get a real phone eventually, one of those phones with the pictures on it that you touch. So I'm going to have to get one of those. And but they're teaching me how to text on my flip phone. So they're teaching me a new culture. They're teaching me, you know, I went to a party the other night at one of them's house, and I think every middle-aged white man in the world needs to hang out with an apartment full of young black kids, because you're going to learn a lot of stuff that you didn't know before, and you're also going to enjoy the heck out of yourself, because the kids I work with are fabulous and I love them to death. So
well, that's fantastic. Well, it just so happens that I know someone who could help you, me, if you do decide to start a blog when things kind of calm down, because. I find for myself that it's a great way to another way to connect with your audience and your readers, but also just a great way to keep the writing skills sharp and just to stay in that habit of writing. So
what would I blog about? I mean, would you write a? Would Amy have a blog? Would I have a blog? How does that work?
I recommend that you have the blog in your name as the author, Jack July. Like mine is in my name. And I write about a lot of different things. I write about the writing process, but I also write about health and wellness, you know, things that interest me, things that I think will be of interest to my readers, obviously the Right Stream Radio Network and things that we talk about here. I write a lot about spirituality and prayer. I mean, I kind of, you know, and a lot of those things are part of, you know, my original, you know, my book that I wrote in 2008, but it just kind of, you know, you find, and over time, you start to find the posts that connect with your audience. That, you know, you have ways of seeing those statistics, and you start to learn what your readers are really interested in, and you can kind of focus on those things. But I see it as a vehicle, as a good vehicle, just another way to build up your SEO, and, so that when somebody's searching, search engine optimization, just another way to expand your presence online.
Okay, I never even considered that. I've heard a lot of things. You know, a lot of people tell me a lot of things. Michael Eisenberg, once again, you know, filled me in on a lot of things. He said I should tweet. I should tweet things out. I should do that. He said that's a big deal. So, it all sounds very interesting. And then you have the issue of time, because I'm not a stay-at-home father anymore. I work 12 hours a day in a factory. You know,
right.
So. I don't have a lot of time off, and I have kids to take care of, and I'm working on children's projects, and I'm hauling them to school, and piano lessons, and acting lessons, and whatever else they do. So for me to monitor a blog and to me to do all these things, it means that I would be stealing time from them, and I'm not willing to do that. But what I am willing to do is sit down and bang out this next book. So I hope I get it done, and I hope people enjoy it.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you were willing to be part of the CLFA on Facebook, though, because that's been it's been awesome getting to know you, and you and I connected over music, so I'm really happy about that there's somebody else that shares my musical taste in the group.
Yeah, so. it's somewhat eclectic, but it's wonderful, nonetheless. Yeah, I owe that to my father. I owe that to my father and mother because they always played music in the car. I remember singing with my mother, driving everywhere. We would sing Partridge Family songs in the car on trips, you know, and it would be a lot of fun. And so I owe my mother and father introduced me to all different kinds of music, and I owe them for that joy because it is a great joy.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's funny. I have the same memories of singing in the car with my mom. Too. And it's a great thing. Well, we have, Jack, in the last couple of minutes, is there anything, well, first of all, let everybody know where they can purchase Amy Lynn and, you know, where else they can find you.
Okay, Amy Lynn is available on Amazon.com, and it is also available through Kindle Books. And it's only $3.99 on Kindle Books, like one of the authors told me that When you put a book on Kindle, remember you're playing for beer money, so don't overprice it. So that's fine. $3.99 is plenty. The book itself is thick. It's heavy. It's 400-something pages, so it's a long book. And it'll cost you around $15 on Amazon, the dead tree copy, as they call it in the business, I guess. And that's about it.
Well, Jack, I want to thank you.
You can also find me. I'm sorry. You can also find me on CLSA, but you'll have to pay attention to find me, but I'll be there. And
you're on Goodreads also, aren't you? Goodreads?
Oh, that's right. I am on Goodreads. Yes, I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me. Yes, I'm also on Goodreads as Jack July. There. I am reaching out. I do have tentacles, so I am getting out there. So I just don't know all the places I am. It's a little confusing.
You'll have to write it down so you remember.
I'm just kidding. You are here in a little dot, you know, you are here.
There you go. Well, Jack, it has been a pleasure, and I wanted to thank you so much for joining me today on Write Stream Tuesday. Congratulations on such a fantastic book. I mean, especially for your first novel. I mean, the book just stands alone as exceptional, whether it was your first book or not, but considering it was your first book, it's that much more impressive. So I will be posting a review in the next couple of weeks on my blog and on Amazon and hopefully on Goodreads as well.
Well, thank you very much, Dari. I enjoyed being here. I enjoyed being with you. And I also want to thank you because your support of libertarian and conservative writers is awesome. And the people should know that you do so for little or no compensation. I believe you are truly a soldier in the Second American Revolution. So thank you very much.
Well, that is quite a compliment. Thank you, Jack. And I just really believe so strongly that we have to engage the culture if we're ever going to turn this country around. And
mm-hmm.
I so appreciate you and all of the conservative libertarian fiction writers and creative people who are out there just making it happen. So we're in this together, that's for sure. Well, Jack, God bless you, and I will see you on Facebook and the CLFA. And thanks again for joining me for WriteStream.
And thank you, Daria. You have a great day.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to wrap up another Write Stream Tuesday. Please join me here again next week at 1 p.m. when my guest will be author Christopher Bunn, who is another member of the CLFA. And until then, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity.